This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
This is the Michael K. Show.
Obviously, I'm not pleased with the number of games we won. I'm disappointed that we couldn't do better than 6-10. But I do see progress in the building.
I think that the Giants just have a different feel. I think that there's an adult in the room when it comes to Joe Judge. I think that if they get him more talent, he's going to be a very, very good coach.
If you want to say that there's a positivity in the room, then you've got to be all in for 2021. And there can't be any excuses. This has to be a playoff team next year. At least a 9-win team.
Makes the whole Giants offseason feel very Sam Darnold last season. It doesn't it feel like the mono situation last year? We didn't get the full look. Let's wait and see. Hey. And the unfortunate part is what happened? We got a whole nother season, and we still don't really know.
The Michael K. Show.
I feel great. So let's keep going.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Hi, waiting on Chris Canty. Our good friend will join us in a moment. I want to remind you, Knicks playing Utah tonight. At the Garden, Knicks just finished a 3-1 road trip. The Nets just beat up on Utah, I believe, by 34 points. So we'll see what the Knicks do. And it's interesting, and we'll talk about this a little bit later on. It seems like Steve Nash knows that Jared Allen is the guy that should be starting at center for the Nets, and he's starting him at center, and Allen has been playing great. But one thing, Kenny Atkinson got fired because he started Jared Allen at center. So we'll see how that plays out. We will see how that plays out. The new morning show on 98.7 ESPN is a keeper. It's great. It's how you should start your morning if you're a sports fan. It starts at 5. It goes till 8. It is called DCR, DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. And the man named Canty, Chris Canty, former Super Bowl champion with the New York Giants, joins us right now on the show. Chris, how you doing? Belated Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you guys. I'm doing well. Still trying to adjust to mornings, man. Getting up at 2:30, 3 o'clock, that hurts. I don't care what your strategy is, but I'm still trying to figure out what the best way to go about this is. When exactly should I take the nap, and how much sleep do I need to get at night in order to be ready to go at 5?
Are you really doing like 2:30, 3 a.m. wake-ups?
Well, he's got to prep.
He does.
Yeah, I got to prep. Like, I mean, you can't watch everything at night, right? Because that means you're going to bed at like 10 or 11 o'clock. So, I mean, you got to get up and get up to speed on what you missed.
Chris,
and then by the time you do that, it's time to go.
Here's what I would do, Chris. I've said this for years, especially since you're working from home, right, a lot of times. If I'm Dave, if I'm Rick, if I'm Chris, it's the last thing I do. And then then at 8:15, I go to bed. And then I start my day when I wake
up.
Because you can stay up, watch the games, whatever, and then you just – listen, when I was single, if I got caught up in a good movie, I might stay up until 5, 6 o'clock in the morning. If Goodfellas is on, forget it. So that's what I would do.
Yeah.
Go to bed at 8:15. You don't have to commute. Wake up at 5.
Well, wait.
Have a
and
nice
I sit right
to watch all the games. I'm telling you, your life's better.
Don, if I'm single and I'm staying up till 4 or 5 in the morning, it's probably not to watch Goodfellas.
Wow.
It's a great point.
But maybe it's that. Maybe you obviously had a different social agenda than I did. Okay?
Sex.
But even for the social agenda, this schedule works for you, man.
Now, Peter, you've been doing this for years. So other than nose candy, give Chris a real piece of advice.
Yo, listen, I'll say right now, when I first started doing mornings and we did 5 to 7, that was the earliest I ever woke up. And I think I still got up at like 4:15 because we would prep. We would email all. It's different with sports because the topics can be set late at night. When you're not doing a sports show, we email throughout the day before about what the topics are for tomorrow. We don't have to be up on a 10 o'clock tip. So I can't really relate to waking up that early, to be totally honest with you, Chris. That's a serious, you know, my deal was always get 4 hours. 4 to 5 hours at night and get 2 to 3 hours during the day. And when you see my beautiful face on the Yes Network, you can see that while I'm 41, I don't look a day over 36 and a half.
Wow.
And that's because I prioritize the sleep. Just get the sleep.
Well, I know that the show is going to be great. It's been great for the first 3 days. So continued success and hope that the transition becomes a little easier. So let's Let's talk about the Jets. We were talking about Eric Bieniemy, who the Jets interviewed today. I have one concern with him, Chris. He doesn't call the plays in Kansas City. Now, Doug Peterson was an offensive coordinator under Andy Reid, and he turned out to be a pretty good coach, although notwithstanding the last day. Do you have a concern about Bieniemy being the offensive coordinator for a guy who calls his own plays?
No, I don't, Michael. And you mentioned that you talked about Doug Peterson, Matt Nagy, even though we don't like what Mitch Trubisky has turned into. He's gotten that team to the playoffs a couple of years in his four-year tenure as a head coach. So I just think when you start looking at the success of some of the disciples of Andy Reid, especially on the offensive side of the ball, I think there's a lot to like. The biggest thing is finding a coach that's a communicator, a coach that can develop players. And you can't completely discredit Eric Bieniemy just because he's on staff with Andy Reid, with the job that that organization has done with developing Pat Mahomes and that building that offense and tailoring it to his strengths. So I just think that Eric Bieniemy is one of the hot names in the hiring cycle because he's actually one of those people whose resume projects to be a good head coach. Now, we still don't know if he can do the job. We still don't know if he can lead an organization, but I think he has as good a chance as any of the coaching candidates out there in order to have success as a head coach.
Now, Chris, I'm not sure if you heard the Joe Douglas interview we did yesterday, but the sense I got was he's moving on from Sam. I mean, he complimented Michael on his, you know, good point, Michael, about the $25 million they owe him. If he is ready to move on from Sam, does he hire someone that agrees with him? Or is he open during the interview to possibly have his mind changed if enough head coaches come into the interview and say that they're excited to have Sam as their quarterback?
Well, here's the thing, Don. I think Joe Douglas is genuinely open to having a conversation about Sam Darnold, but I think you guys hit the nail on the head yesterday in the interview. Just from a financial standpoint, it doesn't make sense for the Jets to go with Sam Darnold. I mean, we're 3 years in, and it's still a question mark on whether or not he can do the job. Bill Parcells used to say this all the time. I give a player 3 years to show me what he's got, and after that third year, I make a determination. Now, whether or not it's of any fault of his own, we still don't know what Sam Darnold is. And you're a year away from having to make a commitment where you're paying the kid $25 million a year on a fifth-year option. So I don't think it makes sense from a value proposition standpoint for the Jets to stand pat at the quarterback spot, especially when you have the second overall pick in a quarterback-rich draft. You don't know how many times you're going to be at the top of a draft like this. So if you have the opportunity to take a quarterback because you're not sold on the guy that you got under center right now after seeing him for 3 years, to me, you have to take advantage of it. But again, I go back to Joe Douglas when he's going through the interview process, being on the same page and being okay with whatever direction the new head coach wants to go with, because he's the one that's going to be responsible for developing whoever your quarterback is, whether it's Sam or a new guy.
Who's the better quarterback, Chris? Is it Daniel Jones or is it Sam Darnold?
We don't know. We have no idea, and I heard you guys talking about it in the 3 o'clock hour. I just think it's way too early to tell who's going to be the better player, but I will say that Daniel Jones is probably going to have another opportunity with the Giants just because he's only in his second year, and the team was in playoff contention all the way up until week 17. So I think that when you start looking at the situations and where the Giants are in comparison to where the Jets are with their program building, it makes a lot more sense for Big Blue to run it back with DJ and give him another opportunity as QB1. I still believe this, guys. Had it not been for that hamstring injury, we're talking about the Giants hosting the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the wild card round this weekend, not the Washington football team.
See, that's what's interesting, because I was talking to those guys. What would the record be? Do they beat Cleveland? Do they beat Arizona? Do they beat Baltimore? I mean, I think that at least one more win – and that would have gotten them in. But what if that injury doesn't happen in Cincinnati, what do you think their record would have been?
Well, I mean, if you're a 7-win team, that's just good enough, right? Because you got the head-to-head tiebreaker against Washington. So I just feel like in that last stretch of games, had Joe Judge made the decision immediately after the Cincinnati Bengals game when the injury happened to put Daniel Jones on the shelf for a week or two, maybe you have a better chance of him being closer to 100% going into that primetime game against the Cleveland Browns. And your defense gave you a chance in that game. You kept it close. It was just a matter of you couldn't do enough on the offensive end, and I think that's because you didn't have the threat of your quarterback being able to extend plays, being able to utilize his legs and read zone concepts. That's what Jason Garrett started implementing on the offensive side of the ball when the Giants started going on a winning streak, and that was taken away abruptly. And I think I struggled on the offensive side of the ball down the stretch.
What did you take from the Philadelphia game on Sunday? You've played in games where they didn't mean anything for the team. Do you understand the players being upset? I mean, I understand why Joe Judge was upset. What was your take on how Philadelphia handled that?
Well, listen, I think it was clunky. I think Don used the term they fat-handed. You know, it's probably an organizational decision that they made to not win the game, because I think in the long term you'd rather have the improved draft capital. But, you know, Doug Peterson just did a terrible job of communicating the message to his team and setting the agenda. I think if you've gone into that week saying that we're going to play Jalen Hurts for the first half and then Nate Sudfeld in the second half, I think there's a lot less backlash. But when you allow the game to unfold and then you pull Jalen Hurts at the start of the fourth quarter for Sudfeld, it just felt clunky. And I think that's why the players that were actually in that game and some of the guys that didn't play. Miles Sanders was very vocal about it the last couple of days about how nobody was on board with that decision. I think if Doug Peterson communicates the plan a lot sooner, a lot earlier in the week to his players, rather than actually in the moment, you're probably not getting as much flack. But again, I empathize with where the Giants players are at with it, but at the same time, I also understand that you can't leave it up to another team to handle your business. You got to take care of your own opportunities. And so you can be upset about it, but I just feel like based on the position that the Giants are in, I don't think you need to be the ones that call that out.
No, you got to win more than six games. You can't blow leads against Dallas and Philadelphia the way they did and have a kick coming. But the NFL is very proactive, Chris. I'm sure they took a look at that. Would you see the NFL eventually going to a lottery system? Because they're going to add another game soon. I mean, you don't want to see this happen more often, do we?
No, I don't think it will happen all that often, Don. And remember, I mean, they just moved to this format relatively recently with putting all the division games in Week 17 to kind of prevent what we saw take place between Washington and Philly the other night. So I really don't know what there is that can be done to prevent that situation. I just think that instance is going to come up where, for whatever reason, there's going to be a franchise that decides they're not going to play their best players in that last regular season game. Maybe it's because they already have their playoff position secure. Maybe because they don't want to get any of their key guys hurt moving into the offseason. Whatever the reason is, every team has their own philosophy in terms of how to handle games that don't really mean anything at the end of the regular season. I don't think the NFL can start legislating, you know, teams and what they have to do, or I don't think they can put in any mechanism to deter teams from, you know, sitting players at the end of the regular season. I just don't see how they do it.
Because if you do try to do that, you can always lie. I mean, that's because in the NBA, load management started happening. They would fake injuries. Well, his back hurts a little bit. There's no way you could tell whether a back is really injured or not.
No, especially in football. I mean, how can you tell whether or not a guy's got a soft tissue injury, a sore ankle,
right,
a hamstring? You just can't do it. So again, I think it's a slippery slope when the NFL tries to start inserting itself in team business. And again, I don't like what the Eagles did. I think it was scummy. But at the same time, I recognize that there's probably very little that the NFL can do about it.
Well, see, I find that difficult to believe. When this is a sport that somebody cannot be convicted of a crime, but the NFL can do an independent investigation and suspend a player that had a case thrown out of court because they've got former FBI agents that can investigate a person and find out if they did something wrong or committed a crime. I mean, it wouldn't take very long, Chris, to investigate what Philadelphia did there. You know, so you can at least try, or just go to a lottery system. If you go to a lottery system, then you don't have nobody is going to embarrass themselves like that if it's not going to guarantee a movement from going from 9 to 6, because if it's a lottery, then Philadelphia wouldn't have done that.
I hear what you're saying, Don, but I mean, the NBA has had a lottery for years and teams still tank to try to improve their draft position. I just don't think that happens in the NFL, because it's more of a microwave than a slow cook. I mean, the NFL is like, if a player is not having success, they're not on these timelines where they're giving teams 3 to 5 years to turn the program around. It's like, if you don't have success relatively early, if you're not showing tangible signs of getting things turned in the right direction, then they move on. So I don't think coaches have the luxury of being able to throw games or throw seasons because of the job security is at a premium in the National Football League. It just doesn't seem like a lot of coaches and players have that. So I don't see a world where you're going to see teams tanking games down the stretch. I don't see that running rampant.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Chris Canty, part of our morning show from 5 to 8 every day from Monday through Friday right here on 98.7 ESPN. My two cohorts here, they seem to think that the Bills are the best team in football. I think the Chiefs are still better. What's your take? Please break the tie.
Yeah, I think the Chiefs are still the cream of the crop. The Bills are – they're coming, but I don't think they're quite there yet, and I just have a hard time envisioning Josh Allen going into Arrowhead and beating Pat Mahomes head-to-head. Like, I know that they're not playing against each other. They're playing against the opposing guy's defense. But still, I just think that there's so much firepower on that Kansas City Chiefs offense. They're going to be hard to stop. And their defense has shown when it starts coming to playoff-style football down the stretch, both last year and this year, they can turn it up a notch. I just have more confidence in them representing the AFC in the Super Bowl over the Bills. I just think that the Bills have to go through the process of gaining that experience and playing in the second season before they can have some success.
And I guess the thing, there's two things at play here. It's so difficult to repeat, as you know. And what's been up with Kansas City? They haven't covered a spread since November 9th against the Jets. Now, I know it's not their business to cover, but even Peter was saying, how many times have you been watching games, look at the bottom line, and see they're down 10? Or, they're squeaking by opponents they usually were thumping. Were they just bored? Because for a while there, they still were battling Pittsburgh for the number one seed.
Well, it's a long season, as you know, Don, and it's hard to guard against complacency, especially when you're as good as the Chiefs. So I think there's certainly a little bit of that. But I believe in Andy Reid, and that's a well-coached team. I think they understand what's at stake, and they've already fixated themselves on trying to have a dynastic run. So I think this team is thinking championships, and they've already started with one. And having the opportunity to go through that and learn how to win, especially when you're not playing your best football, that's invaluable in the playoffs. And then the fact that they had the experience of being down in all three of their postseason games last year and finding a way to come back and win those games, including the Super Bowl, I mean, that team's championship medal is tested. So I'm not going to start doubting the Kansas City Chiefs just because they didn't show as well as we thought they should in the regular season.
Good stuff, Chris. Good luck in the morning. We'll all be listening when we're up, and I'm sure you'll get the sleep worked out.
I hope so, Michael. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Take care.
You got it. DiPietro, Canty, Rothenberg. That is the new morning show. You now have a choice in New York, and it's a great choice. A local morning show that will talk about what we're talking about in this area. Good stuff. I'm proud of them. And I did give Rick that call at 3:30 in the morning because that's how I feel about him.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.